together.
Downloads of this show are available on Podomatic.com and the Podomatic mobile app.
It's 7 o'clock. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. You know what that means. It's time for Here Now with Rachel C. I'm your host, Rachel C. Joining me in the studio tonight is Kiki Saab. We're going to talk about the new book. We're going to talk about LRP. We're going to talk about Slow Suck. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff, but first we're going to kick the music off tonight with from a little blah. It's hot out there tonight, people. It's going to be a hot, hot show. We're going to kick things off with something from our friends, Love Honey.
We're Love Honey.
And you're listening to Here and Now with Rachel C. on RadioFreeBrooklyn.com.
Her Trying to Get Rid of Me from Love Honey. Welcome back on this lovely Thursday evening, lovely listeners. You're listening to Here Now with Rachel C., the show that celebrates live performance culture and activism in the arts. And on that note, I want to tell you about things you can go out and do, because I want you to go out and do the thing that the show is all about. I'm having a little trouble getting some access to some of my info here, but I do have something offline here I can tell you about. There's a show coming up June 2nd at Freddy's Bar in Brooklyn. That's a fun venue. Comedy, dance, and live music. Resist. It's a Resist for Greenpeace. It's a Greenpeace benefit. I've sent me my Mike Cobb, former guest here on the program. And go check that out. So again, that's in Park Slope at Freddy's Bar on June 2nd. So check that out if you can. Also, stay tuned to all the social media channels. I'll have some information coming up very shortly this month about next month's RFB Presents show. It's going to be centered around the Northside Festival, and we've got some surprises for you guys. So stay tuned for all of that. As I mentioned, Kiki Saab is my guest. Kiki Saab was one portion of the band Slow Suck. Slow Suck was on the program last year?
About this time last year, maybe a little bit closer to the summer.
I seem to remember it being warm. We were
very warm.
Oh, that's right. I was telling funny stories about when I met you guys. I remember that was in the summer, probably sometime in July. Slow Suck appeared on the show. It was a really amazing thing. But one of the things that came up in the conversation was that you were in production and with Lit Riot Press for a book. And I say in production for a book because this is not your average book. It is very much a multimedia sort of presentation, publication. Is that the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the word that I use normally just to describe it offhand to strangers, family, friends, I'll just say an art book for lack of a better term, because we have all kinds of stuff. We have handwritten text, we have typed text, we have poems, we have short essays, and photography, of course. So, there's a lot going on.
Yeah. It is absolutely beautiful. I'm not just saying that. I got my copy last night. Thank you very much, Lit Riot Press, for that. It's called Set Me on Fire Before I Blow. And that was, and we talked about this a little bit on the show last year, but we can go over how this all kind of started. It is a beautiful thing. And it reminds me a little bit of some other things I've seen out of Lit Riot Press, in that it's some of the books that it's not just a collection of personal writings, essays, or poetry. It'll include photography. This particular book includes a lot of photography. Mm-hmm. I know you had sessions specifically for the book. But for example, Meat and Milk from Fury Young, that has, typed printed poems, and it also has some handwritten stuff. And some of it appears it's kind of copied straight off the notebook paper that he, was writing it on originally by hand. And that, I feel like makes these already personal kind of writings that much more personal, which is actually a really cool way to experience it.
Definitely.
So this was not a typical thing. And as it says in the intro, this is basically, you took personal journal entries from specific years. You had a window there from, what was it,
2012 to up until January of this year, actually.
Okay, so all the way through January. So the book was kind of still being written while you were, after it was decided to be put together. So it's interesting. So you have this kind of, from then to then, these are the journal entries and kind of things sort of, they're kind of moved from there. Is it chronological in a sense?
So yes and no. I was trying to, when we first started doing this, I had all these notebooks, all of this information, all of this text. And so the question became, how do we structure it? And we initially said, we're going to just scan the pages as they are and make a book like that. And it evolved in a lot of different ways, but where we landed was this version of the book. And so what I decided to do was, instead of ordering things chronologically, was that I organized things thematically. And there is an arc to the book for sure. And some things are chronologically ordered, but some things aren't. And I want there to feel like there's a journey that happens and that there's a flow. And even if it didn't happen, in 2012 and it's placed towards the end of the book, it's on the same topic. It's a similar experience. It's a similar theme. It just maybe was written about a little bit more eloquently.
Right. So that being said, and it does kind of feel like when I open it and I read the kind of the foreword, if you will, I get the sense like I'm kind of reading going back in time, because it's kind of like this is what this is, and then you can sort of see how it's kind of evolving like that. Which I think is actually it's the non-linear way of looking at it is pretty cool. How did this happen? Let's go back to that. How were you approached about this?
So it was actually really serendipitous. I met Ben Taylor, one of the founders of Lit Riot Press, who's been working on this book with me now for almost 2 years, at a Northside show that I played. And he was shooting the band that was playing after Slow Suck. And he said, do you mind if I take a couple photos? I said, sure, of course. No problem. That was actually a really horrible show. I broke two guitar strings and I kind of left in a huff afterwards, tried to stay for the next band, but I was really upset. And then I ended up getting in touch with Ben. He posted the photos. They were awesome. And he had mentioned something about doing a lyric book. We set up a meeting, and at the meeting, I took out my notebooks and he said, "What are those?" Right. And it kind of went from there.
Okay. So clearly, you know, Ben saw something in you, I guess, and he's got a good eye. What was that kind of offer? You were sort of primarily a musician,
right?
And I know, like, trained singer and all that. And to, like, how, what was that like for you? Like, hey, we want to use your writings, your musings, as,
you know,
like, without the music, for a book.
I actually was thrilled about it, and I was really excited because I'd been keeping these journals at that point for a bunch of years already. And I remember I was on a trip with my friends upstate, and we're all tripping mushrooms. And one of my friends saw my journal, and he's like, "This is so cool." And I went, "You know what? I'm going to publish these someday." And it was sort of this, like, half-baked idea, but I liked the concept of just being really honest and really raw. And so when Ben brought this up, it felt, again, very serendipitous that it sort of had this thought, like, kind of, you know, harebrained idea. And here was this presentation of, here's a way that we could do that.
Cool. Very cool. So, like I said, this has kind of been in the works for a while. What prompted the idea? So you know, obviously you've got all these journal entries and everything.
Yes.
Where did the idea to make it this kind of a multimedia, like, especially with the photography?
That's
where'd that all come from, and what was, like, tell me about that a little bit.
For sure. So initially, I had this huge store of photographs from all those series of years, and I had Polaroids. Or Insta film, whatever they're calling it these days. and I had a million iPhone photos. And so initially we said, it'd be really cool to include those because, I mean, they weren't taken for production. They were just taken in the moment and are very raw, very personal. But we had all kinds of issues with print quality with those. Mm-hmm. And then other people included, and we have to sign waivers and do all kinds of stuff. And we thought it might be a little bit more elegant to shoot and to do all new photos. So we did recreate some photos that were already in existence. But other than that, it was about theme, about mood, about really trying to get the rawness and personalness of someone's life.
Right.
So some of them are very stylized for sure, but others are less so.
Some, like, this is just my opinion of them, what I glean from them is they look as though they were stylized, but they're intentionally raw. Like, mm-hmm. We're going to intentionally, like, leave what would otherwise be perceived as a flaw. Like, you know,
definitely. I didn't shave my legs before some of those.
Oh yeah. I was just say, like, for example, there's body hair. Like,
yeah.
But which is, like, you know, isn't what you would expect of a typical, like, staged, you know, professional shoot at all, or something like that. Or, you know, if the makeup smudge, we're going to leave it. Some of those close up shots that you can get in there, you can actually, like, look, you know, if anyone's ever had to try and put eyeliner on, just anyone, any listener out there, it's like, that's what it actually looks like in the mirror. And somehow it's supposed to look good when you step away. It's
somehow, like, by some miracle. Like, yeah, but just like, it's crazy. Yeah. That's definitely what I wanted. Uh-huh. I wanted it to feel real. I wanted it to feel human. I think we live in an age with social media where everything has a filter and everything is airbrushed and everything is just so. And that's not life. That's not reality. And I think that can be really, really damaging. So for me, I felt like I had the, you know, the courage to do the opposite of that and to put that out there and to say, you know, this is what it looks like. This is who I am. And that's reality.
Yeah. When Kiki says she put herself out there, she's not kidding. These journal entries, these are your journal entries and writings, but they're very, very raw. They're very, it's all put out there. I mean, you journal the way I think people are supposed to be. It's like, you know, you're kind of writing creatively, but this is really deep, heavy journaling from someone who's clearly, like, wants to hold on to what they're experiencing. And you can kind of taste and sense and smell things a little bit. Like, you can kind of put yourself back in the moment, and the images help with that as well.
For sure.
But, the image is also very raw, but this is you really are putting yourself out there. Are certain personal topics you get into and everything, we'll get into all that, but how scary was it going into this edit, or was it, were you just like, I'm ready to finally let everything go?
It's much scarier now. Okay. Now that everybody's getting their copies and sending me pictures, and my aunts and uncles are, oh, I have your book.
Oh, God. Great. Don't turn the page.
Please, like, God. I ran into one of my mom's clients the other day, and I was holding the book. They said, what's that? I said, nothing. They said, oh, it has your name on it.
It's mine.
Oh, strange.
What does it?
You know, that happened. It was at first very liberating, and in the process, I definitely had moments of feeling like, oh God, should I share that? Should I not share that? And because of the personalness of the topic too, it definitely could be very, you know, emotionally triggering at times.
Sometimes people who have been, I have something I've come to notice is people who've gone through trauma can be triggering for people who, other people who have,
yeah.
You know, especially if they haven't really kind of processed or kind of worked through certain things in their own behaviors and stuff.
Definitely.
So, but I mean, one thing, I guess it, just, I mean, I just got mine last night, so I haven't read all the way through it. But what I have read there, I was immediate, like, not immediately, but I was already finding things where I was like, yeah, I get that. I felt that. And I think that has to do, I think the real potential in this, the real beauty in this is that you're being so open and raw and honest that these are things that there are certain things we all feel.
Absolutely.
All of us. And maybe more so young women have, anyone raised as female who
yes.
identifies as female and is going to, like, experience even more. And I think that, and that makes people less lonely.
You know, like, Rachel, that is my entire goal. So if that's how you felt, even just reading a part of it, I mean, I feel like then I've accomplished my job, because I think that that's really what emboldened me to do this and gave me the courage to do it, that I don't want other people to feel alone, because I know it might not be to these extremes, or maybe it is, but everybody experiences these feelings. And I think that in our culture, there's such an emphasis on just putting out the good stuff. And I want people to feel like it's all right. And you said earlier about, you know, talking about the emotions. I don't remember exactly how you phrased it, but in the opening passage, I said that, you know, I want to re-experience the pain as much as the joy.
Right.
And that's definitely how I write. That's how I journal. And I want to remember that it wasn't all just great, or it wasn't all just bad, because life is complex and multifaceted.
Yeah. It opens with, I'll read some of it. I'm not good enough to write this book. I'm not even good enough to write these notes on this piece of paper. What do I think I am? Who do I think I am to share myself with the world? Did this reopen some stuff for you? Like,
absolutely.
Like saying, like, how, like, if you know, having to, like, share all this, was it kind of like, did you at any point kind of go, really? Like, I don't want to do this anymore? Or, like,
I think I had a moment. I never felt like I don't want to do this anymore, but I definitely had a moment or two where it hit me like, you know, this is going to be read by other people, by a lot of other mm-hmm. people. And that opening passage, I think, was all those voices, all those people telling me. I mean, I had somebody tell me, you're really going to do that? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, to publish your journal entries. And so that for me was coming from that perspective of, this is what I've been told. This is what I hear.
Right.
So I'm saying, you know what? I'm not good enough. Maybe I'm not, but I'm doing it anyway. And this is why.
I'm very glad you did.
Yeah.
On that note, before we get any further into
sure.
the program, it's called Set Me on Fire Before I Blow. And your band, Slow Suck,
mm-hmm.
Great. You had a track called Blow,
yes.
which I made sure to include here. Is this the title based on the song, or how's the song kind of intertwined with the title of the book?
So this is one of the first songs that this is the first song that I wrote for the band, that we played with the band. And the bridge of the song is just those lyrics, set me on fire before I blow twice. And that for me felt like my sort of like early 20s coming of age feeling, is how I was feeling all the time in relationships in my life, that I was just bubbling up
uh-huh.
and that I just needed somebody to say, okay, yes, I'm with you, I'm here, before I really lose it myself.
Okay.
Because it's going to come out somehow.
All right. This is Blow from So Suck.
Is there room left for these bones when I've grown out of all of my preschool clothes that I might still fit if I changed my nose back then? And where's my mom? But did she go away? 'Cause she
wasted on Sunday smile.
Listening here now with Rachel C. on Radio Free Brooklyn. If you missed any of tonight's broadcast or you just want to catch the whole thing all over again, tune in Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. I keep getting these text messages for Google verification codes. Whoever is trying to hack my Gmail right now, just stop it.
It's insane.
Someone's trying to hack my Gmail while I'm on the air. Don't fucking do that. I will fucking, I'm in super internet radio station land. I have tech things around me.
Mm-hmm. We'll find you.
We will find you. I'm here with Kiki Saab and Ben Taylor. He doesn't like to come on mic much. He's shooting the show today. We'll have photos of this soon. We're talking about Set Me on Fire Before I Blow. So let's talk about some of the stuff that you're clearly getting into.
Absolutely.
Body image issues, kind of the need to go over things over and over again to kind of, and you know, I think there's a good a yin and a yang to that, to savor details, to appreciate it. It's a good thing, but then sometimes you can get a little caught up. It's kind of also mental health issues.
Yep.
It sounds like you were kind of, you see a little, you see, this is where I see it, not necessarily linear, but a little bit, like you said, thematic elements.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's where we're kind of not feeling good. Here's where we're being, we're trying to treat it. Here's where I'm consistent. Here's where I'm not.
Here's where I'm ignoring it.
And here's ignoring it. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? And you know, because it's interesting, because like these journal writings start before you're kind of in the band with, so it's like and producing. So I don't know if where I'm kind of interested also in like we're on the journey through mental health, and does the music and the getting on the stage again and stuff come in too?
Absolutely. I think it's all intertwined. So I've suffered from anxiety since I was a kid. So that's always sort of been an undercurrent in my life, and panic attacks, and that's abated in a large way. And I'm really grateful for that, because panic attacks are hell. But when I went away to school to conservatory in the UK, I was really struggling with depression, and I didn't even really know that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt horrible all the time. And I was in a really intense program, and I learned a lot, but it was for theater performance. And my way of coping with that was exercising a lot and eating next to nothing. And I lost a ton of weight and got really sick and ended up leaving the program because I just didn't know how to manage and cope and deal with my stress. And at that time, I was on medication, and I had gone off independently for about 6 months, mm-hmm. and that's when things kind of started to spiral. So that was my first going off medication, and I did it 5 more times over the last couple of years. So that's a big lesson that I've learned.
Yeah.
But you see that throughout the course of the book for sure, because there would be periods where I would be taking my medication, I would be getting sleep, I wouldn't be going out, and I was doing okay. But then, you know, you feel like you're doing okay and you don't take it, and then you're going out and you're out with your friends and you're playing shows and you're up till 4 a.m., you know, on someone's roof doing whatever, and the cracks definitely start to show. So I've done a lot of masking in my life and holding it together. So I think it's really surprising for some people. Like I had one of my old bandmates said, you know, you're one of the most emotionally stable people I know. And I said, that's hilarious. And thank you. Because I definitely present well, but there's been this undercurrent, and I think it felt shameful sometimes to talk about. So I would write it down and deal with it that way, pretend it wasn't happening and say I was okay. But when in reality, there was sort of this undercurrent that just kept going and that I never really took seriously for treatment.
What made you take it seriously? Or did you ever take it seriously?
I did. This past January, I ended up taking myself to the hospital, and I said I was in a really bad way. And that was the first time it had ever gotten that bad that I took myself to the psych ER. And, mm-hmm. And that was really scary for me. And that was my point where I was like, you know what? I thought I had this under control. I don't. I was off my meds again. And as it turns out, they weren't the right meds anyway. So,
yeah, which actually leads me to a little, but that's very brave. And in a way, you kind of have a little bit more when you're self-admitting, from what I understand, it's there's a little bit more autonomy involved in there. You're
absolutely,
it's kind of like freedom in submitting. I'm going to submit myself to someone else's care, but you know, it's a little, I'm glad it went that way for you, as opposed to someone else is going to kind of order this for you in your life. And so
I felt that
you have less of a voice.
Yeah. Very, very shortly after, if I didn't do something, because my parents have been, you know, seeing this for years, and I think I was doing a good job of masking, but my mom was starting to notice. And so I felt like, you know what, I'd rather do this my way than have to have, you know,
right.
My life kind of turned upside down, and mom say, all right, you're coming home. And I really, honestly, at the root of things, I want to be well. And I think it took a lot for me to face the fact that I had to take those steps and put my life on hold and actually take it fucking seriously, because it is serious.
Yeah, I don't think some people realize any, like any other profound health issue, like, for example, cancer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or that's something I think a lot of people can relate to. It kind of maintenance and take in addressing that health issue, like finding the proper treatment, getting the treatment in place, making it part of your routine, maybe adapting your life around it if you have to.
Yeah,
that's a full time job.
It is,
and that's why, you know, it's hard to, and you know, that's one of those things. I'll do it when I have time to, because I have to. I have this obligation because I'm an adult. Because I have mm-hmm. that, you know, I have to go to work. I have to go pay that thing. I have to go take care of so and so. But no, this is. I think people realize how much it takes to kind of get well.
Yeah.
Or to treat like big health conditions like that, and that if you can kind of frame it like that, I think it's a really important thing to talk about too, in terms of like what obstacles people face in terms of health. It's
God, absolutely.
You know.
And like you were saying, if it were a physical illness, and this is what, you know, sort of everyone keeps reminding me, you know, if you had diabetes, would you say, oh, I don't feel good about that diagnosis, or I don't believe it, so I'm not going to do anything about it?
Yeah, no. Your body will whip its own ass.
Yeah, so it's definitely a necessity, and I think it's something that was very, very difficult for me to accept. I always felt like I'd be one of those people that could take some medication for a little bit, and then I'd be fine. So it was very humbling for me in a way to say, okay, this is something that needs to be addressed. And you see it throughout the book. I mean, there are bouts back and forth where I'd go home for a little bit, see a doctor, come back up, and then go back, see a different doctor. And
right. With healthcare varying state to state, not being, you know, and it's changed even since you started writing the book. The ACAA passed in 2013, and that kind of changed the game. But there's still, there are things lacking. But yeah, you travel state to state, and how easy it is to get your medication can be drastically different, whether or not you can get it, like things like that.
It's insane.
And so these are the kind of things. But one of the things, because based on the writings, it sounds like at certain times, like, I take this pill here and this pill here.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, well, I have this whole like little like pharmacy in my kitchen. And
that
it's,
feels
and
like
it's
that.
Just, and it, and I don't know if it's, and I appreciate you being open and honest with that. I think people got to see that and realize what a challenge it is. And you talk about maybe I was just not on the right beds. I mean, it's a bit of a tweaking game, I guess, but it's like you can go so wrong.
Well, you can. That's the thing about mental health too. It's not like blood pressure medication where you say, okay, your blood pressure is at this level, take X amount, we'll measure it, and then we'll adjust accordingly.
Yeah.
There's no measurement for this kind of stuff. I mean, for people that like take different kinds of mood stabilizers and things, you can do blood tests to make sure that you're not over a certain level. It's going to be toxic.
Right.
But
we can, but also, and you're talking about how you described how when in England, you didn't realize that you were, you knew you felt bad, but you didn't realize you were dealing with major depression. It's hard for the patient, the person with the illness sometimes to say, am I better? I don't know. Cause I don't know. What's normal supposed to be.
Right. And I was young too at the time. And sort of what I've learned is, you know, the younger you are, it's harder for you to have insight. And I felt like that even when I took myself to the hospital, I was like, I know something is very wrong. I'm like, but is it really that wrong? I'm okay. Right. It isn't really that
bad. I'm not as bad as that guy over there who's talking to themselves or like, you know, undressing in front of, you know, I'm not completely delusional right here.
Right? Yeah. So like, oh, I must be okay. And it's easy to lie to yourself too. Yeah. And to push things down, not deal with them. And last year was sort of a crazy year with family stuff and just life stuff generally. So I think I was doing a lot of stuffing down and not addressing. And it worked up until a point it didn't work.
And then because you have too much to do and you get overwhelmed, I know that feeling.
Yeah.
On that note, before we get any further into the hour, let's hear some more Kiki's music, because that's part of why we're here. And we're going to talk. Thank you so much for your willingness to talk about all this. I think it's really important.
I agree.
And I think that's something if people with maybe other things that they're dealing with in their life can kind of relate what you're saying about mental health to like their thing, like your diabetes, your whatever.
It doesn't matter what it is, really. Yeah, I totally agree. Take care of yourself, please.
Please do it. For the love of God. And don't hack my Gmail. Okay. Take a little music break. We're going to kick things off with She from Slow Suck. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned. We have more.
You, I love. addiction teasing. It was the summer later.
All right, that was Castle Black that we just heard with Premonition. Once again, you're listening here now with Rachel C. Rebroadcast of the whole thing Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern up on Podomatic next week. I'm here with Kiki Saab talking about Set Me on Fire Before I Blow. That's the new book. Where can one acquire this? I mean, and I'm not lying. It's a beautiful thing. It looks beautiful, but it feels beautiful. And it's a beautiful thing you did. You want to see a really raw, honest thing. I mean, these for journal entries. These are raw and open and vulnerable. And this. Check it out. Where can someone acquire this book here?
This book can be acquired on Amazon, Amazon UK, Amazon France and Spain, Barnes and Noble online, Books a Million, Powell's Books, and Indiegogo. As of right now, I also have a couple copies on me while I'm in the city.
Oh, and if you don't know how to get a hold of Kiki directly, you can email rachelc@radiofreebrooklyn.org. I'll pass everything along. This is a Lit Riot Press produced piece. Check out Lit Riot Press because they do a lot of, they're doing really interesting things with books. So what kind of plans do you have for the book and for yourself in the future? Actually, on our little music break, Ben threw out, hey, do an album on the book.
I think that's a brilliant idea. I love that idea. My dad said the same thing. He's like, you could turn all these poems into songs.
Let's have a lot of poems. Songs start though, don't they?
Poems?
Yeah.
I don't know. I get a melody or a lyric, and poems for me are poems, and songs are songs. But that's just the way my brain works. I know for some people, it goes both ways, which I think is awesome, and I'm very jealous. I think that's an option. But what's interesting about this book is that I feel separated from some of the things I talk about. In this book now, and some things I don't. So it's interesting that this book is coming out now and people are reading about all these thoughts and feelings that I might have had, you know, at this point 5 years ago, and that are just sort of coming into light. So for the book, what I'm really hoping for is what I talk about the introduction, that anybody who reads it will feel like they're less alone, that they can relate to it, that they're not the only ones. I'm really just kind of putting it out there and trying to encourage and foster honesty for other artists, for other young artists, and I think for young people generally, because I think a lot of things I talk about don't even have to do with mental illness. It's just stuff you think about in your early 20s when you're trying to figure out your life.
Sometimes you don't have to still be in your early 20s to think about some of it. You're talking about like pressure, like especially some of the body image stuff, the pressures of, you know, there's one thing I read, you hear from an old friend and like all this stuff comes flooding back, like is she like, you know, the body comparisons and stuff. And that's the thing that we all sometimes, my experience, men, women more than men, are under these these societal pressures that are kind of unreal. And taking these, also posing for these beautiful photographs in the way you did, by like say with the body hair and things like that, and maybe something isn't quite perfect, that the clothing isn't resting just so, or it's you're kind of breaking, it's all still beautiful, but the fact that you, like I said earlier, included things typically perceived to be flaws is like really kind of knocking down a lot of glass walls for people, and I think that's really great.
I hope so for sure. And I think that it's an interesting kind of double standard, because I know that I have used myself before, like use my body in the way I look to, you know, in social relationships, situations, that kind of thing. But at the same time, I am a human being and I don't look great all the time. As a matter of fact, I don't look great most of the time, just because I'm human. So that for me was important to be like, yeah, I have pimples on my back and I have
the flesh isn't always pretty. You know,
but that's who I am.
Like it's, you know, for all of us, you know, it's skin. It gets zits. It gets. You know,
I think I just feel tired of trying to be somebody else or be somebody that I'm not, or try to present myself in a way that is socially acceptable, but not always achievable.
Right. Right. Very well said. Thank you. In terms of the book, also, like, is this something you'd like to do a book tour? Do you plan to appear in any like actually brick and mortar stores? You're not in New York right now. You kind of went back to Florida for a little bit, took a little Brooklyn break.
Yes, a little break, but I'm so happy to be here this week. Definitely. I think that's sort of the next step, and something that Ben Taylor and LRP and I need to talk about our next steps, but we're doing a small release event this weekend, and so I think that's sort of the first step in doing this with you, and thank you for having me. And we're shooting a video
interview
tomorrow.
Thank you for coming back here.
Oh my God, I'm so thrilled to be here. But I think just getting it out there right now is the biggest thing, and getting it out to as many places and to as many eyes as possible.
Mm-hmm. What other than the book, do you have any plans for collaborating with other musicians, maybe another band, or Slow Slug coming back together a little bit, or what's musically? Because I mean, I see so much of your music in this.
Definitely. Yeah, there are all kinds of early lyrics and there are later lyrics. I mean, writings that inspired songs for sure. So right now what I'm doing is I'm taking time by myself to write. The last couple of months I was here in the city, I couldn't write anything and it was driving me insane. And I think when I wrote some of my best songs is when I had a lot of time alone and time to think and time to process things. So I got some really fun new toys that I'm playing with and a cool interface with which to record. So I'm just recording a ton of songs a day, writing as much as possible.
That's great.
And seeing what's marketable that I can sell for commercial pop things and what I can use for myself. So I'm just taking some time right now to kind of hermit up and create as much as possible. I'm doing a ton of poem writing, essays that I'm submitting, and seeing what I can produce right now, because I think the time is very ripe for me.
Yes, so glad to hear that. And I agree. Do you think, here's a question, since we touched upon mental health issues, do you find that it's easier to produce the creative works when you're in a better state of mental health? There are people who feel like, hey, no, when this clouds me and I can't create when I'm treated, I would think that maybe that's just not the right treatment for you then, but like, do you think that, you know, finding some good mental health, or I should say, like, being able to manage manage your brain chemistry a little better is helping in terms of getting things moving? And because it seems like a lot of things are falling into place for you.
Yes, they are. And this is a big argument that I've had with my psychiatrist and therapist. When I first started taking medicine and I started feeling differently, which I think was actually feeling good, which I hadn't for a long time.
If you don't know, if it's unfamiliar, even if it's where you should be, things that are unfamiliar don't always... feel wonky,
And I told my therapist, I said, I don't know how to write like this. I'm afraid I won't be able to think. I won't be able to create. I won't be able to play music. I don't feel those depths of the high highs and the low lows. And I don't know what to do in the middle.
Uh-huh.
And she said, I think you'll find that it's interesting that you'll actually be able to access all of those things in like a stable, consistent, more measurable way that's more productive when you find that stability. And that for me is something that I'm still figuring out and still working with, because I'm still having good days, bad days as we're adjusting things. But I'm going with the approach, Rachel, that does work. I'm going with that.
But then also, you know, clearly you're someone who has managed to hold on to all these journals from different periods of your life.
Yeah.
So if you needed a little maybe sense memory jog, you have it. It's just, how did you manage to hold on to all these journals? Were you just really good at like holding on to your stuff and have not had...
and those journals especially were so precious to me. I had, you know, from when I met Johnny when I first moved up here, and that was a really intense time, and I wanted to remember that. I wanted to commemorate that. And I think that those were easy to hold on to. The ones from college I had that are now totally falling apart. I wanted to bring it up, but I was afraid I was going to... it would get damaged. And then the ones after that, I started to notice sort of what I was doing and the value and continuing to do that and holding on to those for a reason. And then the book came up. So that's sort of how they've amassed, and I've held on to them all this time.
Are you still journaling regularly?
You know what? I'm doing it more on my computer, and I really need to get out of that habit, because those journals, I feel like, are gold, and I've really gotten stuck on my laptop. Which is great.
But the writing is happening still. It's always...
the writing pretty much never stops, which is great and terrible when I have to work.
Work? This is my work. This is my life's work.
It's funny, though. It's, you know, things will happen, and sometimes it takes me a couple of weeks, though, to process, to get perspective on something before I'm able to write about it. And other times something will happen, and I'm on a bike ride, and I have to stop, put the kickstand down, take my phone out of my sports bra where I put it when I ride, and write a poem on notes on my iPhone. So it comes all the time.
What would you ever consider doing another book, having done this one again?
I would love to. I think it might be different. I think I would like to really curate the pieces and write them for a book, for sure. But yes, I would love to.
Having looked at the book, and I think anyone who looks at the book, especially the images, we'll kind of get why I'm asking this question. Did you find this cathartic at all doing the book, especially the photo shoots and things like that? I mean, now you got to look and go, oh, wait.
I did that. It was cathartic because I got to say a lot of things to, two people, not that I don't even know if they'll read it, but that I always needed to say, wanted to say, closure I needed to give myself. And this gave me such a beautiful outlet and opportunity to do that and to give myself that closure and to feel like I was being heard. Definitely cathartic. I think sometimes still painful to look at and to say, oh God, I did feel that way and I didn't do anything about it. But I feel like I have released a lot of that pain and a lot of that turmoil into the book. And I feel like I'm sort of embarking on a newer chapter of my life, not to sound totally corny, but it genuinely feels like I've left a piece of myself in this and I can move forward with that knowledge.
Just talking to you tonight, it seems like you're embarking on a new chapter, not just because of the book, but because of some experiences you had in, like, we were talking on and off the mic about in the last year, like you really, like, things are kind of coming together for you in a really good way.
They are. It doesn't always feel like they're coming together, but I'm trusting in the process that they will. And that I feel like everything happens the way it's supposed to, even if it doesn't make sense in the moment. I think that in the end, you know, things will happen the way they need to. Well, so
I wish you a lot of success with this. It will happen. I can't wait to hear more music from you.
Thank you.
Like all the things I know you are, could do so well. If you check out Solicilux music, available Spotify, iTunes, any place you would download and stream music, check them out. Set Me on Fire Before I Blow from Lit Riot Press, available in all the places you listed,
places.
But like really easy, barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com,
or kikisabater.com. You can see more about it there too.
Okay, all right, she's got the website up too.
Oh yeah,
thank you so much for coming back here.
Thank you.
Best of luck to you. I'm gonna have to switch, do some teching stuff here. We're gonna end on one of the newer Slow Suck pieces, Blood Moon. This you can kind of get a glimpse of it in the book a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. In we go. We're taking. Thank you so much. Tune in next week, 7 p.m. for an all new Here and Now. Lots of surprises coming our way. Ben, thank you for doing the photo documentation of this, and thanks for giving opportunities to people like Kiki here.
Thank you, Ben, putting out for some, believing in me.
All right. This is Blood Moon from Slow Suck.
it burned all my favorite rings. I can't feel my body so. My throat don't belong to me from my senses, but you're still on my mind.